A large crane has arrived at the Quincy Historical Society.
Doing the borings to see how the ground quality is and what have you in order to pour the footings.
Okay, Jack Freiberg, his voice has already been heard on the Mary Griffith Show this morning. Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, brought to you by Refreshment Services Pepsi, Harvest Ridge Coffee. Chuck, probably use the other one over there if you don't mind. Chuck and Jack are here. Chuck's going to move his microphone so I can see his visage. There you go, baby.
How about that profile?
How about that? You know, you look fantastic, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Here are two elderly gentlemen. They're not that much older than me. Who a couple of years ago looked like death because they were close to death. But transplants saved their lives. I'm sure people didn't come up to you and say to your face, you look like death, did they?
Way too nice. But what they do is after a transplant, they're nice enough to say, hey, you look great.
Yeah.
Which means, oh, my
which
God.
Means, oh, my God, I looked horrible.
You know, no. The usually what I get is, you know, we were really starting to worry before you got that transplant, and then you got that transplant. Oh, my God, you look so much better.
We were in the waiting room one night at Barnes, and this is after my transplant, but the other people there were waiting for transplants, and my wife kind of discreetly nudges me and says, you see that guy over there? That's, I said, yeah, oh, my gosh, yeah, he's just great. I said, that's what you look like.
He has no color in his face. Well, by way of introduction, Jack Freiberg and Chuck Schultz are here, and the Washington University and Barnes Jewish Hospital has one of the oldest. They were pioneers in this transplant, organ transplant, and still one of the most renowned transplant centers in the country right here in the heart. Since 1963, Barnes Jewish has transplanted more than 13,500 organs and is ranked 17th in the nation for transplant volume. When you think about that, because St. Louis is definitely not in the top 17 biggest cities in the United States. And this is why we talk today to Jack Freiberg and Chuck Schultz about their transplants. They're going to tell their stories. They're also going to try to drum up a little bit of support for the foundation. They have both donated to the Barnes Jewish Hospital Foundation that raises money for their transplant center. And that way physicians and scientists can pioneer new and innovative procedures. And things are always being discovered and being found. So let's talk. And Jack, why don't we let you go first? You have a really unique story. You are not only a transplant recipient, you are a transplant donor. Let's start with the donor first, okay? Jack Freiberg, tell us. Now, remember, Jack, we only have a limited amount of time. Chuck is chomping at the bit to tell his story, too.
In 1994, my sister was diagnosed with chronic myelogenous leukemia. And at that time, the treatment was a bone marrow transplant. Now they have a miracle drug called Gleevec that throws you back into cytological remission, which is the best remission you can have. It's a long-term medication, but that wasn't available to us as an option at that time. And we tested the family because the most preferred bone marrow transplant is a sibling transplant. So we went ahead and tested, and I was the best match for my sister. So I was not actually her bone marrow donor once. I was her bone marrow donor twice. Once at Northwestern Hospital up in Evanston, or in North Chicago, actually. And then the second time at the University of Minnesota up in St. Paul. Unfortunately, the second transplant, she got what is referred to as acute mucositis, which is when one of the side effects of the chemotherapy that you receive is mouth sores, and her mouth sores got so bad she was bleeding from her mouth and throwing up blood, and frankly it was nothing short of horrific. And at that time then she was placed on a vent and went ahead, and she never regained consciousness after all that was done. And
but she died knowing that her brother loved her enough.
That was to this day the toughest decision that my family's ever made. And that I told them all, although I was health care power of attorney, and ultimately my decision, unless everybody, my two sisters and my mom, agreed to go ahead and pull the plug, I wasn't going to do it. And we all agreed that was the right thing to do after she had been in a coma for a little over 2 weeks.
That is so heart-wrenching, and that you were willing to do that. And, of course, many people would do that for their own sibling. And then when you think about people who have done that for a complete stranger, you know, people who have been a bone marrow match for somebody who's a complete stranger. Now the technology has gotten a lot better. Your sister may have survived now. That's the unfortunate thing. We always look back and we say people who passed, if they had gotten that disease today, they might have been saved.
But that is also the reason why you need to donate to this organization like the Barnes and Jewish Foundation, because it's that kind of research that allows us to get to the next generation of treatment. Most recently, I know they did at least one where they did a kidney transplant from a pig. And they're also working on a mechanical kidney. My individual story was I knew I had kidney disease for quite some time, and your kidney function just keeps decreasing and decreasing and decreasing, and you know you're headed towards dialysis. And then finally you need to go on dialysis. And I was on dialysis for 3 years, and let me tell you, that's a party you don't want to be invited to. As I always said, that's one girlfriend. If you cheat on her, there's consequences.
Yeah, you got to go all the time. I have a friend that's struggling with this right now. She's a caregiver, and some days her person she cares for doesn't want their dialysis. Well, then guess what? 3 days later, it's even worse, and you really have to be disciplined. Frankly, Jack, let me ask you this quite personal question. I've had people who say, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't go on dialysis. I would just say, that's it. Just, you know, keep me comfortable and let the kidney disease kill me. What made you want to fight?
Well, I knew that there was a good chance that my quality of life would dramatically get better if I did get a kidney, and obviously that has happened. Now, you're going to be on a wad of medications for the remainder of your life. And one of the things that's a side effect of this is with a suppressed immune system is that you're very, very subject to skin cancers. I just had my second squamous cell skin cancer taken off the top of my head.
He's wearing his ball cap today, advertising the Governor John Wood Mansion. I thought it was because of their fund drive, but it's to cover up his Band-Aid that's on top of his head. So you're alive, but you still have to watch things.
Well, you have to, particularly on these skin cancers, like I said, you're 60 times more likely to develop those than the average Joe. So as both my dermatologist and Dr. Gandhi, who is the Mohs surgeon at Quincy Medical Group and who's a wonderful guy, you need to be vigilant and watch yourself and go in at least once a year to your dermatologist and get this all checked out. So when you get the kidney, it's not a get out of jail free card. Remember, it's not a cure, it's a different form of treatment. And you need to take your medications and be steadily vigilant.
When did you get your kidney transplant?
It'll April 21st. So it'll be 2 years in 2 days.
Happy birthday to Jack's kidney. It's his kidney-versary. Okay.
My liver is Susie.
Yeah, we haven't really named it, but I can tell you that, you know, when you have these victories that sound like they're little victories, they're major for you, because the last time I saw my nephrologist, both here in town and down at Barnes, and they both said to me, you're doing so well, we don't need to see you for a year.
Isn't that great?
Which just makes you you want to jump up and scream, yahoo, as soon as that happens.
So here's a survivor, Jack Freiberg. We're going to hear from another survivor, Chuck Schultz. But first, we're going to take a break. Get ready for Chuck Schultz's story, which is very dramatic. Because, of course, you know, poo-poo, he couldn't get it done just in one fell swoop. He had to take several chances. because he wanted to wait for the exactly right liver. Not quite, but yeah. So
not quite.
How he got Susie, coming up. It's 9:31. We are back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. I made Jack Freiberg cry earlier as he told the story about his donation of bone marrow to his sister. Two times he did that for his sister. Unfortunately, she did develop a complication and passed away. But at least she had a chance at life, thanks to Jack Freiberg, who was willing to give that. And just think about the people who do not know the people they're donating to. They just give this gift just out of the kindness of their heart, knowing it will help other people. And that leads us to Chuck Schultz, who has named his new liver Susie.
Well, my granddaughter named it Susie.
Although we have no reason to believe that she is named Susie, but you've named her that. And you have birthday parties, just like Jack will have his kidneyversary party. We'll have to put that on our birthday list.
I have a new granddaughter, Elizabeth Johnson Schultz, who was born on Susie's birthday, February 13th. So now we have even more cause to celebrate.
Two reasons to celebrate. Chuck, your story is similar in that you had 20 years ago, you got this life-threatening disease, but it's a little bit more difficult, I think, to get a liver than it is a kidney. I mean, in the scarcity of organs, I guess there's a hierarchy. So tell us your story, please, because it didn't go smoothly all the way through.
No, it didn't. But first of all, let me thank you and WTAD for putting us on, because it's such an important thing, and I think there's a lot of people out there that would consider being donors, but they just don't think about it. It's not top of mind. April is Organ Donor Awareness Month. The hospital had a nice event a couple weeks ago, and that's what Jack and I are working on, and working with the foundation down there at Barnes-Jewish Hospital. As Jack said, they're doing research at this transplant center, which is supported by the foundation. I had the privilege of going and taking a tour. My surgeon, Dr. William Chapman, is heading up some research there where right now, of all the kidneys that are donated, all the livers that are donated to you, they don't use them all. They're all not of enough quality to be used. They tell me somewhere around maybe 11 or 12 out of 20. Well, he's come up with a new method. It's kind of like dialysis, Jack, that they actually, when they harvest the organ, they then treat the organ. And now they're able to save maybe 16 out of 20. Wow. Well, think of all the lives that are saved as that result. You know, in Illinois, there's 5,000 people right now waiting for a transplant. 300 will die this year because they don't get the transplant. There aren't enough organs, obviously, to go around. My donor was, I had a cadaver, so I don't know my donor. I was able to write the family, not identify myself, but I wanted to let them know, obviously, how grateful I was, but also that we continue to do this to promote people becoming donors, save more lives so their loved one's gift continues. So I'm a big believer in the Barnes Foundation and their work. My story started, I felt terrible. The people that saved my life were Dr. John Scott, now retired physician in Quincy, and Dr. John Bostick, also retired Quincy physician. But I felt terrible, weak. I noticed on the golf course, my sons are telling me, Dad, you got to hit a 6-iron to get to the green. You got to be able to reach that with a 9, you know. Well, I'm sorry, boys. I'm a little weak. So John Scott sent me to John Bostick, and I was out campaigning or something, pulled in my driveway at 10:30 at night. My phone went off, and it was Dr. Bostick at 10:30 at night. And I said, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm down here at my office, and I'm Googling pictures of you out of the Herald Way. And I said, John, you need to get a life. You should go home. And he said, no, I've discovered it. And I'm telling you right now, you and Becky are going tomorrow morning. You got a 10 a.m. appointment with Dr. Jeffrey Crippen, who's the head liver guy at Barnes. And I said, what's going on? He said, well, I Googled these pictures. I look right above where your glasses are there. There's no fat there right above your eyebrows. So if that starts shrinking, you're wasting. You're in the final stages of liver disease. You're wasting. So somehow we made it down. We went down there the next morning, and when we went to the information desk, they sent us to an eighth floor, and it said transplant. We're in the wrong spot. I'm not coming down here for a transplant. But we weren't in the wrong spot. We met Dr. Crippen, and he took one look at me. He had never seen any chart on me, anything. And he said, I know what you got. And
wow.
He gave me three options. He said, if you don't want to do anything, you'll die within a year, and it's not a good way to go. So we eliminated option number one. Option number two is try to get a transplant. And I said, well, yeah, I think that's for some little kid or something, isn't it? I don't need a transplant. He said, well, option three is do everything I tell you to do, and then come back and see me in 90
days. And Becky
days.
Said, that will never work.
Well,
doctor,
that's pretty unusual.
Yeah,
but
doctor,
I'll tell
you
what,
tell you, he will not do everything anybody tells
you to do. The law firm that I was of counsel gave me a leave of absence, and the family has a little place at St. Simons Island, Georgia. So we moved down there, and I joined the health club, and I got a relation with a health provider down there, and I started taking my medicine. Changed my lifestyle diet-wise, you know, green leafy and whole grain and all that stuff. If it tastes good, don't eat it.
No mushrooms for you.
As my dad once said, sure, I'll live longer, but who the hell wants to? Yeah.
When I saw Dr. Crippen that morning, I weighed 256 pounds. I weigh 179 today.
And
so
that's so
a little lifestyle change.
I want to ask you about that because you were wasting away. Your fat was completely gone, but you were big.
Well, what I had is called non-alcoholic steatohepatitis.
Yeah, and it makes you
They refer to
puffy.
It as NASH. And you get what they call ascites, which is fluid retention.
Yeah.
And with me, it was a lung. I would go to Dr. Nasseri, God love him, once a week. He was the pulmonary guy. He'd take a big old needle, stick it in my back into my lung, and take 2 liters out of my right lung every week. It'd be back in like 2 days.
Yeah.
And the result of that was one of the hardest things about going through the transplant process, you get a lot of MRIs. And if you have a lung that's filled with fluid, you have to lay on your right side so your left lung can expand, and that's the only way you can breathe. But if you do an MRI, you're on your back, and you have to do those breath holds. And, you know, of all the stuff I went through, because you're in there like an hour, that was the toughest. But anyway, I did everything he said to do. He said, no one's ever done that before, but I'm going to try to, you know. So he nursed me along. That was 2006. I would get horribly sick. My poor wife. There's all sorts of side effects when you don't have a good liver. So then in 2014, I was so sick, they sent me back to Barnes. And they had been checking me. They told me you're at an elevated risk for liver cancer. So I'd been getting ultrasounds twice a year on that. But I got down to Barnes, and they found a tumor. So Dr. Crippen says, you got liver cancer. You'd think that's the worst thing your doctor could ever tell you. That saved my life. That got me the transplant, because it's not how long you wait, it's how bad you need it. And the score that you get, if you already have a disease-ravaged liver, which my bilirubin was like off the charts, and you have liver cancer, you get a really high score. So within 3 weeks, I'm on the list. So that's mid-October of 14. November 7th, I get my first call. And I go down there and do the whole, you know, and Jack's probably been through this too. You know, you're not supposed to be more than about 2 hours away. We're a little over that with Barnes. But, you know, we had a plan. My son's had a backup car. You know, we always had the car gassed up in the backpack. So, and I get down there, and I'm, you know, you got to get admitted first. I go to admit, and I'm like, hey, I'm an organ recipient here. And, yeah, okay. You know, they send me up to 17th floor, which is livers. And I'm kind of, you know, pressing all the nurses in. They said, hey, we haven't even harvested the organ yet. So, you know, calm down. But that, you know, when Barnes can do that themselves at the hospital, that's the preferred. But obviously they get livers from all over the country and everything else, pancreas, kidney, everything they do. So in any event, they took me into surgery. I had a reaction to the anesthetic, lost my blood pressure for 6 minutes. And they had to pull me out, and I didn't get the liver. Now, they are not enough livers to go around, so you always call a backup. So another guy got that liver.
Good.
I saw him the next morning in ICU. So then I had a couple of calls where I was the backup. And, of course, I went and was prepped and ready because I know it can happen. It happened to me. But it didn't happen. So then on the fourth call, I'm right outside the operating room. We said our prayers, and I love you. We had the whole family there. And we could hear the chopper. That's my liver coming in. And I had this wonderful surgeon. And I said, well, you know, we always have to check it first. We do a little biopsy, make sure it's a good liver. Well, it wasn't a good liver. Oh, so that was trip number four. But it was by now we're in early February. And it was a very nice day. And, you know, right across the street is Forest Park. So took the granddaughters to the zoo. That was on a Saturday. The following Friday the 13th was my lucky day. And I got a really good liver. The surgeon told my family that, you know, pinked up right away. That's a really good liver your dad got. So, as Jack said, you know, when you are a patient, I have a nurse coordinator that tells me she's my nurse for the rest of my life. I get my blood tested here at Blessing, and they shoot it down to Barnes to make sure everything's okay. If I miss one of those, she calls me.
Mm. Good.
And, you know, when it comes to sun protection, she told me, I've been doing this for 25 years. I've never had an organ donor recipient that didn't develop some skin cancer. So I want to be the first, but, you know, so every day, whether it's raining outside or sunny, I'm putting on the sunblock. Of course, God only knows what we did when we were kids and ran around with our shirts off the whole summer. I think I'll still pay that price. But in any event, I have two great physicians here. Blessing has been wonderful in their coordination with my care through Barnes and the Siteman Center down there. And that's why Jack and I support this foundation. And we urge people to just think about that. It's very simple. Everybody should have a healthcare power of attorney. Put in there that you want to be a donor. And you could be a hero and save somebody's life.
There's, and there's another plug here, too. There's at least two types of organs that can be donated to by a living donor. One, obviously, is bone marrow.
Mm-hmm.
And the Be the Match program, which has several million donors listed with it now, is very simple to get on that list now. Much tougher at the time that I originally donated to my sister. Because all you've got to do now for Be the Match is go online and look at their website and go ahead and sign up to send them you a kit, and it's just a cheek swab to get on that list.
Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk more about the Barnes Foundation. No matter what charity you choose to support, and if you know of another organ donation place, these guys would be happy if you sent your money there. But the bottom line is, this doesn't happen without a lot of research and a lot of doctors devoting their lives to making these things happen. So we're going to take a break, head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative, see what's happening up there, and then we'll be back to talk about two men who are very wonderful guests on the Mary Griffith Show once a month, and they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for other people who made their lives possible. Folks, if you could see what goes on during the commercial breaks, you would pay admission. I think I'm going to start charging. I'm going to put a little gallery. After the Dogwood Festival is over, the little risers they use at the Lorenzo Bullhouse, I'm going to bring them down here, face them not towards the street, but towards this parade. And, you know, every Friday, the third Friday, when these guys are on, this is what's going to happen. Okay, so Chuck got his transplant from Barnes. Jack got his transplant from Barnes. Obviously, they're with us here today, and they celebrate. Jack's celebrating his kidneyversary on the 21st on Sunday. Let's talk a little bit more about how people can help. Obviously, money does help, and you've got to have a research institution like Washington University, like Barnes Hospital, some of the other great transplant centers. I know Pittsburgh has a huge one, and the reason I know that is because my aunt used to be the answering machine, you know, back when they had live people, you know, don't leave a message at the beep, but I've got to get a hold of somebody. She was paging all the doctors and everybody for the transplants when all this was going on, making sure that everybody was getting to the hospital and that the organ was on its way. So organ transplantation is nothing new, but it certainly is. Technology is changing everything. So you guys are one of the donors. Your names are mentioned on the roll of honor at Barnes Jewish Hospital for the organ donation program. Jack, you were talking about Be the Match. You know, people can contribute in so many different ways. Monetarily, they can put themselves out there and say, if I match somebody, I'd like to be tested, I'd like to be considered. What are some of the other ways people can help?
Well, first of all, you know, kidney donors you can live very quality of life with just one kidney. So there are a lot of living kidney donors. You know, those are the sort of things that a lot of people don't think about, but that you do have an option of being a living kidney donor. You know, the quality of the care that we received at Barnes, I felt, was just absolutely outstanding, because I've never met anybody in my life who says, I don't think I got some downtime today. I think I'm going to go check myself in the hospital. If you're there, you're there for a reason. Okay?
Yeah, I can imagine Chuck said, these doctors saved my life. I imagine Becky was, I don't think Chuck said, Becky, you know, I'd like to go to the hospital today. I bet you Becky had to hogtie you.
My poor wife. God love her. She's a saint.
See, she knew when she married Chuck, she goes, you know, Lord, I may not live the best life, but I know I'll be a saint if I put up with Chuck Schultz the rest of my life.
Well, I recall something about in sickness and in health, and man, did that ever turn out to be true.
You never know. Yeah, be careful, because when you get married, you better a caring person. But as you said, Jack, the care that you get, those people are so dedicated, and they're assigned to you, and they really get involved with you. They want you to be successful. They want you to live.
Yeah, well, and see, you're only in the hospital now for a kidney transplant for 3 or 4 days. Now, they want you to stay somewhere near there, particularly that first 30 days or so, so that if something comes up, you can be at the hospital very shortly. For me, it was very convenient, because my daughter only lived about 40 minutes away from Barnes, so I just stayed with her and her family. And if we needed any major things, which we did not, because home health care is also a big, important part of this. And as Chuck says, at that point, your nurse coordinator, you're talking to them every day and sometimes several times a day on that first couple of weeks after the transplant.
Even today, you may have a question. Something changes or medication.
Let me ask you that question. I'm curious about this. How do you know, you know, if you get sick, how do you know that it's like, oh, I hope it's not something bad with my liver, or, oh, I hope it's not something bad with my kidney? I mean,
I can only speak for myself, but you get pretty good at reading your own labs, don't you,
Chuck? I know those numbers. But beyond that, you have to have a primary care physician that's coordinated with your nurse at Barnes, mm-hmm. and I have Adam Rayburn, and he has Leslie Ketters takes care of everything I need, and if it's a new med, they'll check with them to make sure that's okay.
You can't take NyQuil. I mean, you can't even take anything without asking first, like even over-the-counter stuff, right?
Yeah, and of course we have to take our anti-rejection meds.
Do you still
twice
have to keep on that diet? Are you
life.
Still good on
oh,
that
I've
diet?
I've got some flexibility, but I don't want to do anything bad for my new liver.
You're motivated to keep Susie's liver in good shape. She gave it to you.
You've got a lot more flexibility with your diet after that than you do when you're on dialysis, because your phosphorus numbers go right through the roof, and you've really got to be careful on that. I mean, if you're going to cook a potato, you have to either boil it for 15 minutes before and then dump the water off. And, you know, before you can actually cook the potato. I mean, there's just a lot of different things.
The anti-rejection meds, the way they work is they suppress your immune.
Right.
So you're not going to have your eggs sunny side up. You're not going
to
be eating any sushi. Anything like that. I mean, I'm not supposed to have red meat that's not well cooked. So I haven't been eating any more red meat, which is even better for my health. Because, you know, I wouldn't want it if it wasn't probably medium rare or something.
Because one of the things that a lot of people don't think about, but what impacts me, because I hunt and fish a lot, is I'm not supposed to be handling any kind of game, dressing any game, because of all the creepy crawlers and diseases that things like a mammal or a fish have on it will impact me because of my suppressed immune system.
Yeah.
So you mentioned waterfowl too.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle change before, as you're trying to survive long enough to get the transplant, and then it's a lifestyle change afterwards because you want to honor the people who did that for you and keep that in good condition.
Absolutely.
Well, we are so excited that you guys came by today. Jack, I'm going to give you the last word. Next month, a story about the spittoon of Mark Twain. So just stay tuned for that from Chuck Schultz. Jack, give us the one-minute drill on what's happening across the street at the Old Gardner Museum, the Old Quincy Library, now the Historical Society. There's a big crane over there boring into the ground.
Yeah.
A big expansion's coming.
Yes. Well, they're currently over there today doing test borings for the ground for the foundation and the expansion of the on the west side, because that's where our elevator and additional footage is going to be. The entrance on the front is no longer going to be used. You're going to be entering the History Museum on the square from the west side. And we announced this past week the fund drive, of which we've already raised a little under 20%. But we really feel that this building is one of Quincy's crown jewels, and we need the community's support in order to help preserve that and keep it updated.
Okay, you're trying to raise $2 million. $400,000 is in hand. If you want to help, the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County is the place to send your check or to send your queries about that.
They 425 South 12.
Yeah, they want to get this done next year during the bicentennial, which Jack and Chuck are also very, very involved in. Well, folks, I think we'll wrap it up from there. You guys have done yeoman's duty supporting this.
June 11th, we are having a bus trip from here in Quincy over to the Peoria Riverfront Museum. I don't have all the details other than a date at this point, but the bus trip will, the bus will fit 56 people. It's going to be a first come, first served. One of our motivations from over there is our weather vane, which has stolen the show, is on display over there. The one that was set atop the old CB&Q building from 1899 to 1939. So
okay, stay tuned.
Thank you, Mary. And please consider being an organ and tissue donor.
And
you don't need them when you die, and you'll save a life.
I need a cornea transplant, so I'm right there with you guys. I need a cornea transplant. I've known this for years. Of course, I'm waiting. You know, I mean, because if your cornea transplant doesn't work, guess what? You don't have an eye.
You're in trouble.
You're alive, but you can't see out of your eye. So a lot of people need transplants. A lot of people would be willing to be organ donors. But make sure that your name is on the list. Put it on your driver's license. Tell your next of kin. Put it in your will. Make every effort known for it to happen.